That's what I wanted. Thank you. Okay, great. Okay, so I'm guessing that the lights going on and off is supposed to be me going to the whole question and answer thing. So if you have any questions, think of them now. I'm going to just make one small point that I did not say during my talk, but it has been pointed out to me and I do think is definitely worth making. When I was showing you those figures on, median family... That was scary. This figure on real median family income, and you've seen this stagnation to a great degree in family income over this period. Of course, these are inflation-adjusted dollars. Over this period, between 79 and the present, productivity has increased about 60%. And typically, we as economists think that generally workers should benefit from increased productivity, not just the... the rich people and the people who own all the companies. And what we've clearly seen is that while productivity has increased, the gains for this economic growth have not been distributed towards families. And then if you look at the dispersion within groups between lower paid and higher paid workers, you certainly see that it's only the highest paid workers that have benefited from productivity gains at all. And the rest of us have just been left to fend for ourselves. Okay, so questions. Yes, Timmy.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, very good. Okay, so Timmy has asked me to explain what non-farm and total private mean. Basically, this is total non-farm employment, everybody in the whole economy, including the government sector, and that's important. And then total private is total private sector employment. And this data comes from the survey of employers that happens each month, the employer survey. If you look at the men, if you look at the men, what is interesting here is that it is only because of government employment that total male employment has only dropped by negative 0.1%, which I just think is kind of interesting because we're supposed to be in the era of small government, but we're not. And so it's only because of government employment that you haven't seen a larger decline overall in male employment. That's a good question. Yeah.
I have a question about figure 7 and 8. Uh-huh.
Well, the reason is that the question was, why is it that employment gains for women over the time periods that I've looked at in the charts are higher for women than for men? This goes back to the broader changes in women's labor force participation. So that first chart that I showed you, which I will just scroll back to because I think it's important to just look at again, shows that women have been increasing their labor force participation over this period. And so when this last chart is looking at changes in employment levels over, a period 4 years out from the beginning of a recession. So, typically recessions don't last that long. They last a year or two. And so then employment starts growing again. And because women's labor force participation has been growing in step, you've seen their employment come back faster. And it's, so that would be my short answer.
Can I follow up with one question?
Yeah. I think there's obviously the issue of the question was whether or not the smaller growth in employment at the end has to do with labor force participation. Employment levels are determined by both labor supply and labor demand. That is, how many workers firms want to hire or can afford to hire, and then how many people are offering their labor into the labor market. So my first part of the answer to the question was just focused on the labor supply angle. Oh, there's all these women out there just screaming and wanting jobs, and that's why you saw their employment gaining while you didn't see men's. But on the other hand, the real difference between this most recent economic recession of the early 2000s and previous economic recessions is that we have not seen employment come back during this recession. You haven't seen employers out there demanding workers, creating new jobs. So even if people wanted jobs, there have not been jobs available for people to take. Even for both men and women in previous recessions, for both men and women in previous recessions, the economy started coming back. But, you know, so the economy started coming back, employment starts growing. The level of male employment is, of course, larger than the level of male employment, so the share growth is smaller. So that's another reason I couldn't, not looking at the spreadsheet right now, I couldn't sort of decompose that for you, but that's another reason. But that in this current, most current recession, it's quite simply that we had not gained back all the jobs we lost during the recession until January of 2005, a full 4 years and 11 months after the recession began or ended, began, something like that. A job lost recovery for most of it, but yeah. Todd.
And your figures 2A and 2B, you have the citizen women?
Yes, yes. The question was, why is it that the labor force participation rate, the labor supply of women with no kids, is actually smaller than for women with kids? And this was that caveat that I noted at the beginning, that this, ideally, this chart, and we're going to do this, we're going to have another paper coming out on this topic, because quite frankly, I'm obsessed with it, but we haven't gotten the data just right. And when I redo that chart, this will just be prime age women, 25 to 54, even 20 to 45. So just looking at the area over which most women have children in the home. But this includes women who are 20 and over. So it's both the older women who don't have kids, who are retired or have dropped out. It's also the younger women who are still in school, who are not going to be participating in the labor market because they're still in school and they don't have kids because they're still in school. So that you're getting some of that as well, although I think that the other end is larger than the younger. David.
Figure 5, I think this is the...
Not in a consistent time series. You'd have to, prior to 1947, you'd have to use the U.S. Census, which occurs every decade. The question is there no data before 1947? And this data comes from the... Well, yeah. What data? Where are you getting the data from, 47 to 68 for this chart? CPS. That is a CPS. Yeah, so it just wasn't done before then.
Okay. And
CPS is? The current population survey, which is the main form of labor market data used in this country besides the Survey of Income and Program Participation.
And I don't remember, there was some discussion in John's talk about how this, right?
People were working longer hours, more women. Yes, the question is why was family income stagnant over the post 1973 period? What other demographic trends were going on? One thing about this chart, it's real median family income. This is also, of course, a period of family of great family dissolution. So you're seeing a very large increase in single female-headed households, and it is, of course, the case that those households are much more likely to be in poverty. Women, especially single mothers, do not earn as much. So that's a countervailing factor as well that's going to be bringing income down. You have strong immigration trends, especially through the 1990s, that might have some effect. You have the declining labor movement. But you have a whole bunch of those other sort of macro things going on, deregulation, increased privatization, the deunionization, all the other isations that we know and study. But in terms of the demographics, it's increase in single-headed households, I think, would be the biggest one of note.
So wouldn't it be better then to look at the real male income and real median?
Well, that's what we that's what we do here. So here you can see that it is only for men at the top of the income distribution that they saw an increase in wages. So this is, this is regardless of family or household status, and that men in the middle were earning about as much in the early 2000s as they did back in 1973 in inflation-adjusted dollars. And that for women, it was the case that for women at the bottom, they were still earning, they're still earning less than they were in inflation-adjusted dollars in the late 1970s, but women at the middle and the top saw their wages rise. So So yeah. So I mean, we definitely you need to deconstruct the changes in family patterns. Another number that you could look at instead of family income would be household income, which at least gets it. It does get at some of the combining of households, because most single mothers aren't actually living on their own. Many of them are cohabitating, many are cohabitating, or they're living with friends or family or relatives. That changes the household trends in different ways than the family trends.
And last question, I promise. What accounts for the upward trend for the 50th percentile for women?
Well, the upward trend for women at the middle and at the top, that that's the feminist movement. I mean, that's the successes that we've seen over the past 25 years in breaking down the glass ceiling, in breaking down occupations for women, in women's increased access to higher education. I mean, right? I mean, when my mother went to college, I mean, you didn't have Title IX. You didn't have all the kinds of things that made it possible for women to compete in the labor market. And women have benefited enormously from that in terms of wage gains. What is interesting about that, of course, is that the gender pay gap closed throughout the 1980s, but it actually closed primarily because male wages fell, not because female wages rose. I mean, female wages rose, but when you kind of look at it in tandem, a lot of it has to do with the fact that male wages were falling. And then throughout the 1990s, you've seen the gender pay gap stagnant. And in fact, a lot of the trends that we were seeing, at least throughout the late 1990s, were that the gender gap was actually growing among younger cohorts of workers. So among young men and women, you're seeing the gap widening a bit, which is very disconcerting, because ideally, you know, 25-year-olds, I mean, they should be paid much more similar than we might think 45-year-olds women who've dropped out for a number of years and experienced the mommy pay gap. But that'll be the next, when we do this next, we'll talk all about that. Todd? Oh, well, yeah. Are women benefiting at the expense of men? I think that there is, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. We'll cover that in the next seminar topic, because, I mean, I think that that's interesting. It's the same kind of question that you get around immigration and race issues. Are immigrants benefiting at the expense of African American workers or sort of native workers of color who are already here? I think that, I mean, it certainly is the case that women have done a lot better. Right, they're moving up while men are not. But a lot of that has to do with the composition of the kinds of jobs that the economy is creating. Right, we're an economy that used to have manufacturing jobs, and now we don't. Now we have mostly service sector jobs, which women have historically been more likely to be employed in. I mean, so I think that there's a ton of different things going on over there. But it is the case that women are more likely to go to college. So one has to wonder to what extent women feel more pressure to compete than men do. And I think that is certainly the case. I mean, I think that women understand that there's still discrimination in the workplace, that there is still a glass ceiling, that they have to work harder than their male colleagues to earn as much, if they're lucky enough to earn as much, and that there are potential long-term trends for that. Is there a question up here? Okay, good. Okay, great. Well, so everybody can go to dinner and do their own thing. Thank you very much for paying attention. I appreciate it.